Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the August 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Joe Vaklevic of Standard Grain from Chicago, Illinois, and Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's start as usual. We'll get a list of items to discuss today from our panelists. We'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel.
Well, the number one question that on a daily basis has been for a while, but mainly today, is I've got between now and Monday noon to do some of my corn still at the elevator, and guys are scratching their head on what to do with that. So there's still some remaining old crop grain out there that needs to be moved here ahead of harvest there, Todd.
Mike Zuzalo.
I guess trying to tie together the equities and the crude oil and the grains and livestock.
Ellen Dearden.
I was really flabbergasted by the move in the U.S. dollar this week. Just a huge, huge move.
And finally, Joe Vaklevic.
I talk about exports. Our new crop export sales are running way behind projections. It's a big problem.
Okay. Why don't we start there, Joe, with you on the export sales. I know they're running behind. There has been much written about this. They're running behind the five-year average, but if you go back far enough, they're not quite so far behind. What do you think?
Well, the big issue here is that we're running, you know, way behind last year and coincidentally, we're very far behind USDA projections. Soybeans were 43% behind where we were last year. USDA is only looking for a marginal decline. Corn 33% below last year. Wheat 13% below last year. So we're running well below where we should be. The problem here, obviously, is a very strong dollar that's discouraging, you know, exports out of the U.S. I think the fact that Brazil and Argentina have improved their infrastructure in recent years is another factor that hurts business here. And of course, we've just got a big glut of grain around the world right now.
Will we be able to catch up with sales? For instance, there was a nice sale to unknown this week for soybeans.
Well, I think we're getting to the point here, price-wise at least, where we're becoming a little bit more competitive, especially in soybeans and in wheat. You know, at the export part of the demand base for beans and for wheat is huge. I mean, you're talking north of 40% of total usage of U.S. corn and U.S. wheat and soybeans is exports. So we've got to get something going there very, very quickly. And you would hope that with these lower prices, we're starting to get to that point.
You mentioned, Ellen, and he followed up just a little bit with this, that the dollar was something you wanted to watch this week. Daily charts have shown a nice rebound in the dollar for the week. They went down to, what, 92.50 and are above 95 or 6 at the moment.
Yeah, really, it looks like we're going to have a weekly reversal up in the dollar. And I think that so long as the dollar looked weak, I thought that there was some incentive for exporters to kind of hold off and not do a lot of buying, thinking the dollar would weaken even more. And with this rebound and a move, this big, huge move up, about a four-point move up, that may spur a little bit more export business.
Mike, you suggested we ought to tie it all into the macro economy. Here we are. So we have a dollar move. We have exports that have been lagging. China is in trouble, or at least that's what they keep telling us.
Yeah, and you know, the market, to Joe's point and also Ellen's, the commodities led us here, Todd. It also, you know, would suggest to us that because China is the powerhouse of the last 10 years in terms of their rapid growth, it's the best indicator for where the market is headed. And I think, generally speaking, the equities finally caught up with the commodity markets as far as real demand. And the question now, the equities are now joining in this global demand battle. Is global demand that bad, though? And I think Smithfield is a good example. There are some real bright spots out there. I take Joe and his point about the grain exports, especially the wheat exports. It continues to be a really big stumbling block for the wheat market and for the wheat price to not get a low put in place at this stage and really take away a lot of confidence of the potential long that's sitting on the sidelines. But if you look at Smithfield's earnings reports this week, you know, their January to June Chinese pork exports were up 45% versus a year ago. You look at the crude oil, we have seen some of the best gasoline production in the last couple weeks. In fact, 2 weeks ago, finished gasoline production here in the United States hit an all-time record high. And I think this is where you're starting to see the market focus more on demand, less on supply. And I think when they get really down to it, they're going to start looking at a more favorable demand base. And I'm inclined to think, like Joe, that the demand and the prices are coming together as the prices have gone low enough. Look at what, like Ellen is talking about with the dollar, look at what the dollar jumped on today. It was a 3.7% second quarter GDP here in the United States. That beat the prior estimate by 1.4%. That is a massive change in terms of just the net change from 1 month to the next. So I think the demand is brightening as far as that goes.
Fundamentally, though, we have a big crop. It looks like, well, I don't know, is it going to stay big? Is it going to get smaller? It's an interesting dichotomy, especially when you look at corn and soybeans separately. Soybeans appear to be getting to be a bigger crop. Corn may be shrinking. What do you think from your side of the Mississippi River?
I think it's shrinking. In fact, I had a meeting today, a weekly meeting that I go to and talk to a couple producers and a couple crop insurance guys that are there. And it is shrinking over here because we've been in a dry area and we're starting to turn a lot faster on our soybeans. I've talked to some clients in near Sangamon County this week, and some producers are starting to roll and shell some corn and disappointing yields so far. And so I think the dry weather has got the crop shrinking. Quite frankly, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why beans haven't taken out their recent lows and gone lower, partly on the weaker export demand, partly on the Chinese issue. But the weather has kept the beans in the ball, playing in the ball game here.
All right. We'll come back to new crop in just a moment. But, Kurt, I want to hit old crop, and maybe each of you can give me an idea, because there will be farmers that have corn in the bin. And I'm going to suggest that we simply say that they have corn in the bin that they want to move out, and that the new crop that they will be putting in that bin is in good condition, so they're going to move it. They apparently have to move it fairly quickly. Kurt, what did you tell them to do?
Well, we've been telling them go ahead and push it out the door. The situation you run into is, especially the elevator, you get hit with another in charge. And all of a sudden, you'll lose the basis opportunity here. Basis is fairly good in some areas. But once you get in that fall bid, all of a sudden, you're 30, 35 under in the country. And that's quite a bit of a hit. So we feel it's a money management game. We feel that move the grain and replace ownership on some type of covered position on paper. We're kind of looking for some type of fall harvest low in through here than a seasonal up as we move into this winter. So we're not willing to give up 100% by selling it and going away. We like moving it and retaining some type of ownership for some recovery this winter.
Yeah, it should have been clear, and I just didn't catch it myself. But you meant, of course, in the elevator. Ellen Dearden, what do you think about old crop corn that's stored in the elevator? Do they take the, what do they do with it?
I think it's got to go. It's absolutely got to go. You're losing on the basis as we move into the middle of September, and my guess is that the board price will weaken in that time frame as well. It's got to go, and if you want to come back and have some ownership, I think you've got a two-week time span to probably get something bought. The March $4 calls around 20 cents may be a way to re-own the thing, but you're losing basis, you're losing board probably.
Joe Vaclavic, I want to change directions just a bit. Where is your office in Chicago? Are you in the CBOT building?
Yes, we are.
How has it changed since the pits have closed?
Well, you know, I know that we saw the headline there last month where the futures pits were closing, but the reality of it is that it's really been kind of a long drawn out process of business moving away from the pits and to the screen. You know, this really started back when I got into business in 2005, and that's when we started to do some side-by-side trading, and it really didn't take that long until most of the futures volume was on the screen anyways. So to be honest with you, the floor doesn't look that different now than it did, say, 2 months ago. They've moved a few things around, but the amount of people down there hasn't really shifted. That was more of a headline type thing. The business and on the future side of it, at least, has been most of it, you know, the vast majority of it on the screen for a long, long time now.
You know, I was listening, Joe, to I was researching some stories, archive stories today from what I had done with FarmAid. A long time ago. This is the 30th anniversary this year, September the 22nd. So I was pulling stories from FarmAid I was there in 85, but I was a student, but 89, 90, 91, 92. And one of the stories that was stuck in the middle of that list was that the Chicago Board of Trade had handed, was giving the pit traders a way to enter electronically handheld devices then. So the electronic trade has been coming, I guess, for a fairly long time at this point. I thought maybe it had changed a bit more, but it appears that it's not been the case, at least since the close of the pits in July. So, Joe, I'll stay with you. Now let's talk about new crop at this point. Producers probably are really pretty worried, especially if they're in an area where they don't have as much corn. What kinds of things can they look forward to? Do you suppose there will be opportunities, or will they have to manufacture the opportunities for sales for themselves?
Well, at this point, there's no way to fix a price that's below the cost of production, and we know that that's the case for the most part for most corn and soybean producers. First thing you got to do is look at your crop insurance situation. If you've got 85% coverage and APH yields, you've essentially got kind of a crop insurance put down around 353 in beef corn, down around 827 in no beans. So you've got limited risk, I suppose, for the moment. We're getting closer to those crop insurance type levels. But other than that, it's really hard for me to recommend making a whole lot of sales or doing a whole lot of marketing when I know that they're going to result in operational losses on the farm. So this is a real tricky situation. And you know something, the market's only really given you two good marketing opportunities in the last 12 months. We had one during the weather scare in July. We had one back in December. And those weren't even that good at the time. They were really just getting the prices back up to about break even for a lot of farmers. So this is a tricky situation.
Hey, Mike Zuzlo, on soybeans, most producers will have to move at least part of them across the scale and are used to doing that. How are they going to replace them? Or should they replace them? What are they going to do with them?
I'm inclined to say not replacing them, Todd. I'd focus my reownership energy and tight money, if I were a producer, on reowning the corn, because I think the supplies are dropping and both domestically and globally faster in the corn. And, you know, to tie into Joe's point about the crop insurance, not maybe he wasn't trying to make this point, but to follow on and make another point is a client in Indiana sent me some information on his crop insurance potential indemnity or claim at 165 bushel actual yield and a harvest price of 335. He'll have a claim of roughly $60 an acre. I think that's worth protecting on the upside. So I'm inclined to think that the soybeans were trimming yield, yes, but at the same time, we're probably going to build acres in South America. And I think for bean reownership specifically, I would probably be waiting for December, maybe even January, to jump back into that. Thinking about the South American El Nino and dry weather buzz that maybe will develop shortly after that December-January time frame. So I kind of lay low in the beans right now and move the beans that I have to, as you suggest, off the combine to get as much room for corn made.
And I think I'd like to ask Kurt and Ellen that same question. Kurt, your ideas?
Well, it varies from individual, but I kind of follow suit. I think here at these lower levels in through here, you have some type of upside protection on it, because guys are going to really depend on some of these crop insurance payments to give them some cash flow here. this winter. But I think beans more probably range bound in through here. You get up towards, you know, the $9 level, it's going to offer some opportunity to maybe add for sales. But then you start hitting the lower end again. I think you got to replace corn and beans both there for some seasonal ups going into year end.
Anything to add, Ellen?
It appears to me that the bean crop is getting larger, so there may be more downside risk in the beans. And I'm not sure if we'll go down all the way to the end of the year, Mike, but I think that there is more downside risk. And earlier talk about $8 November beans I thought was just totally outrageous, and I'm not so sure now.
Has the acreage, prevent acreage or acreage not harvested, just gone away at this point?
No, I don't think so. But the areas that have gotten rain here in the last 10 days, I think, are filling out these pods that when Pro Farmer looked at bean plants, we talked about how heavily potted they were. And I think in areas that got rain, that those pods are certainly filling out. That may not be the case in Indiana and Ohio, which remain really below normal precip over the last 30 days.
Yeah, Kurt, a few years ago when Smithfield was purchased, you called it the great pork robbery of 2013. And we just heard Mike Zuzulo a bit earlier in this program tell us that Smithfield has had increased their pork exports to China from the United States by 45% year over year. Can we ship more of our grain overseas via the pork export market?
Well, I think it's going to be a combination of both, but no, that's fairly well advertised, and that's kind of a situation they were in where they needed to do something to expand overall meat production. No, I think it's early stages. When you look forward and through here, it's really going to start kicking in or be reality when we get into this 2018-2019 time window. They're going to have some ups and downs as we go in through here, but overall, I think that thing's on schedule, and as we move down the road in through here, everybody's going to be back in the hog business at some point in time.
Have you been watching the currencies very closely, Joe Vaclavic? Because there has been, it appears, a race to the bottom to see whose currency can be devalued the most.
Yeah, we watch it just because of, you know, of course, the impact it has on exports and also the effect that it might have on overseas production. I think the big one right now is the weakness in the Brazilian currency. That's going to likely encourage some bigger production down there and kind of discourage some exports out of the U.S. But overall, you know, when you look at the value of the dollar, we're still in the same range that we've been in really since the beginning of May. We haven't really began any new trend up or down here as of late. We had the big correction or sell-off, whatever you want to call it, this week. But all in all, it's been kind of a moot point here for 3 or 4 months now.
Hmm. What other topics do we need to cover today? Is there anything, Ellen, that you've been talking to your producers about or that they've been asking you about continually this week?
Energy costs. Crude oil in particular, which is, to me, the bellwether more so than the natural gas or even the heating oil. But this crude oil market was pretty wild. We had kind of a setup having dropped below that $38 support area very briefly this week and then came charging back to, what, $42.75 for a high today. If we close for the week above $42.50, that gives us a little upside breakout on the weekly chart.
And that will give us what kind of opportunities in the rest of the commodities? Will they just...
I think it would encourage more ethanol production, number one, and I also think that there's a whole lot of folks that haven't been making any extended buys in fuel needs for fall, and I think they probably need to take another look at that.
Is everybody else in agreement with that? I think I've heard that for a couple of weeks now, that if producers are in need of fuel needs that they might want to book. Has anybody else got other things to say about that topic?
I would say only that 42.90 close above on a weekly basis would take out last week's highs, and I'm like Ellen, that would be a very nice signal, and I would call that a buy signal on the charts, Todd. And I think if you hadn't done anything, I recommended locking diesel needs in a couple weeks ago when the U.S. average is around 260 on the retail diesel, and prices have flattened out. But I think if you are sitting on your hands, you probably don't want to do that if you close above 4290.
Okay, different tact at this. Tell me what the primary fundamentals at this point are that might change the way the market looks. So what are the things that could change in the next month and a half that would change the way this market looks? For instance, USDA September crop production report. Is that on your list, or do you think that will change very many things?
Yeah, it's on my list, obviously, and your acreage question is very pertinent, I think, on the soybeans. And obviously the biggest 800-pound gorilla in the room right now in the aftermath of the Pro Farmer Tour is, are we going from a 1.8 billion bushel corn carryover to a 1.3 billion bushel carryover? And will USDA find that in their ear weight scatter diagram in September or drag this process out? I would say the only other thing that was really high on my list and talking points with clients this week, Todd, was the issue with the Federal Reserve, the issue that the Chinese market and the equity market sell-off brought to the table, and the Federal Reserve governor of New York, very strong, powerful individual in the FOMC, said that it is a less compelling environment for rate increases going into September. That could change the whole dynamic of what the market expects going all the way back to the end users. If the end users think the dollar is going to go higher, they're going to sit on their hands because they're going to have bigger buying power. But if the end users think the dollar's going to crash, they're going to say, let's get some needs caught up so we don't have our buying power eroded. So that could be a big issue in a month, month and a half, and you know, tapering back to what Ellen was talking about earlier about the shift in this dollar.
Hey, Ellen, I was thinking the last week and a half or so that the corn had begun to mature fairly quickly and that would show up in at least the crop progress reports, but it has not. We're still on target with our five-year averages. Do you suppose by the time we get to September, USDA will be able to use anything much better than the seasonal averages that they have in the past? They'll have some weights, but I was thinking that they might have a whole lot of weights to adjust the corn with.
I believe there will not be a lot of weight information available. I think USDA, like Mike, the USDA will probably drag out making much shift there. There will be corn harvested. There will be some ear weights taken into consideration, but I think the majority of that will come in October.
Is everybody else in agreement on that one? Do you see any real big shift in the ear weights in September? Okay, I thought that probably would be the case. Let's wrap this up. We'll get a final word from each of you. Kurt Kimmel, I think I'll start with you.
Well, earlier you talked a little bit about the shift from the floor to the screens. When you watch this market activity and when you put orders in manually by hand, we've noticed here it's become more evident that you're trading against computers. Extreme volatility here. You just can't put the orders in fast enough to get in some market situations that you want to be in. So I guess what I'm trying to say is you can use this to your advantage too by using extreme moves up and down for some entry points. It's a matter of being patient and having some type of plan and stick to it.
Joe Vaklavic from Standard Grain.
I want to really stress the crop insurance situation when it comes to marketing. I just think that before making any rash decisions or any panic sales, each and every farmer's really got to take a very, very close look at this crop insurance situation, because there just may not be a whole lot of incentive to do a whole lot of marketing right now, depending on the situation. And there may be situations where there is incentive to do marketing, but make sure that you know where you stand there before making any new crop sales.
Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Well, we haven't touched on our favorite commodity, the wheat market, too much, Todd, other than the poor demand. And I did some research on the major lows in wheat. And if you don't get a low in wheat in September, going back to the 2000 crop year for lead month futures, at least, you know, from a standpoint of between 2000 and 2015, if you don't get a low in September, you've never made a monthly low in the months of October or November. And so then you have to wait for the most frequent time period that we've made a monthly low, and that's in December. About a third of the time we may have made the monthly low in lead month wheat in December. So we really need that wheat to come back around for us before we close out September.
And finally, Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
Well, we always talk about volatility, and we have had extreme volatility in the market this week. But I'd like to point out that the cattle and the feeder cattle market have become the darlings of the speculative crowd. And it's not unusual to see a $2.50 or $3 cent move in both the feeder cattle and the live cattle. So that may be something that the hedger watches pretty carefully, because we've been beaten down pretty far. And one of these little speculative bubbles may be an excellent opportunity to sell.
And that wraps up this 27th day of August edition of Commodity Week. Again, our panelists have included Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Joe Vaclavec of Standard Grain out of Chicago. Mike Zuzlow was here, too, with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. And next week, we'll be at the Farm Progress Show in the University of Illinois tent. Many of the analysts that you hear regularly on Commodity Week will join us over the three-day run of the show on September 1, 2, and 3. That's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week. The Illinois tent is just inside the main gate and to the right. It's at the corner of West Avenue and 3rd Street. I hope to see you there. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.